Penguin Random House Audio presents Lost at Sea, Eddie Rickenbacker's 24 Days Adrift on the Pacific, a World War II tale of courage and faith, by John Wukovich. Read for you by Nathan Agin. Tomo, You Know Why. Part 1. Background to the Pacific. Chapter 1. He has cheated the Grim Reaper about as often as any living man. 1890-1940. They would soon be dead. How could they think otherwise? The eight men, ranging in age from 22 to 52, alone on the ocean, crammed into three tiny rubber rafts, had drifted for so long that they could not be certain where they were or how long they had been afloat. In a day or two, at most, they would undoubtedly join the countless unlucky voyagers lost forever to the Pacific. They had survived multiple challenges. Each day, the sun's glare bounced off the ocean surface to emit billions of sharp splinters of light. No matter where one looked, it was painful. The blistering sun had so burned their skin that one of the group compared it to being turned on a spit. They had prayed for nighttime's welcome relief, only to shiver in the dark from the chilling ocean swells that drenched them. Daytimes we prayed for the coolness of the nights. Nights we craved the sun, wrote one of the eight. Men had lapsed into stupors, bobbing in the ocean with their mouths half open and fatigued heads drooping on sunburned chests. They had battled both extreme hunger and severe thirst, and had grimaced from constricted muscles caused by squeezing into rafts hardly big enough for two people, let alone three. Our bodies, our minds, the few things we had with us were slowly rotting away. Intensifying their anxiety was that they would perish without a trace, denying family and other loved ones details that could help bring closure. They could hold on a while longer, but eventually the Pacific would wield the upper hand. Except for one, the eight men had led routine lives. They had attended school, dated girls, played baseball and football, and afterward commenced careers they hoped would bring long and pleasant lives. The one exception, however, enjoyed a lifestyle the others could only envy. His name dominated the nation's headlines, and he had packed more thrills into his 52 years than the other seven combined. He enjoyed fame as a race car driver, dated gorgeous women, and basked in the limelight of being the nation's preeminent hero of World War I. He had eluded death so often on the racetrack and in the skies that an adoring public believed nothing could stop him. No man of this living generation has seen death more closely and more often than Eddie Rickenbacker, wrote popular author W.L. White. He has learned to look the old fellow right back in the eye, as one man to another, returning his steady gaze. Time magazine turned to legendary figures from ancient Rome in depicting Rickenbacker as a man whose core was built upon a gladiator's indomitability. In October 1942, eight men crafted a rousing saga at sea that inspired their fellow countrymen and enhanced the legend of a man who had long captured the nation's adulation. I didn't go to school, I went to work. Eddie Rickenbacker's youth in Columbus, Ohio, provided few hints of the extraordinary path he would follow. In 1879, his father, William Rickenbacker, the last name contained the letter H until Eddie changed it later in life, joined tens of thousands of Europeans who sought a better life across the Atlantic than that offered by the hard-scrabble existence prevalent in their native countries. William said goodbye to family and friends in the small village of Zeglingen, Switzerland, nestled in the foothills of the Jura Mountains, determined to join his uncle in Columbus and begin work as a railroad laborer. 2 years later, Elizabeth Basler crossed the ocean from Switzerland to settle in the same city, where her two brothers resided. The confident, assertive woman, called Lizzie by everyone in Columbus, adapted quickly to her new surroundings, and 4 years after her arrival, she married William. Life with William, who waged a constant battle with financial problems, was never easy. The birth of their third of eight children, Edward Vernon Rickenbacker, on October 8, 1890, added to William's burdens. Hampered by his inability to provide for the family, the father vented his rage by whipping the children for the slightest misdeeds. Eddie inherited his mother's grit, and before he was 5 years old, he was scouring the city streets for walnuts, rags, or pieces of coal that dropped from railroad cars as they rumbled by. He awoke before sunrise to walk 2 miles to collect the newspapers he would hawk for the Columbus Dispatch and to milk goats to sell to neighbors. Eddie could be counted on to help despite frequent mishaps, beginning with his being struck by a horse-drawn streetcar at the age of 4. He suffered only minor injuries, but more serious misadventures followed, such as the time he tumbled down a well, knocking himself out, or slipped from a tree, scarring his chin. Another time, he got his foot caught in some railroad tracks and watched in terror as a steam engine approached. Fortunately, his brother freed him just in time for the train to barrel past. At age 8, as he raced down a steep hill, his out-of-control cart flipped over on top of him and slashed his leg to the bone. He smoked when he was just 5 and organized a group of roguish youngsters known around the neighborhood as the Horsehead Gang, specializing more in fights and stealing cigarettes than in major crimes. Eddie lacked the comforts that kids from wealthier families took for granted, but his Columbus hardships honed an iron determination to outlast his foes and forged a foundation for his subsequent accomplishments. Eddie's life changed drastically on July 18, 1904, when his father suffered a fractured skull and lapsed into a coma after brawling with a fellow worker. When William Rickenbacker died the next month, the embarrassed son chose to suppress memories of the incident, and for decades, Eddie claimed that his father died when a large piece of timber smashed into his skull. The night following the funeral, 13-year-old Eddie awoke upon hearing noises from the kitchen. He walked in to find his sobbing mother, head in her hands, wondering how she, as the sole parent, would provide for the children. Eddie hugged Lizzie and vowed that he would take care of her and would never make her cry. He then stepped over to his father's chair at the head of the table and sat down as a sign that, henceforth, he was the man of the family. The next morning, instead of walking to school, the seventh-grade student abandoned his education and traipsed out to find a job. Within hours, he started the first of his 6 nights a week, 12-hour shifts, earning $3.50 each week for his labors at the Federal Glass Company, even though he had to walk 4 miles to and from work. Eddie later claimed that the moment he handed his mother his first paycheck was the proudest day of his life. He added, "I changed from a boy to a man," and said that, "I didn't have to be told what we were up against. The day after my father's funeral, I didn't go to school, I went to work." Even though dropping out of school was then not uncommon, Eddie considered his lack of education an embarrassing deficiency. Fearing that people might try to take advantage of him, he masked his shortcomings by charging straight into matters before anyone had time to discover that he could not read or write as well as they could. Get out in front and drive like hell. A crowd in downtown Columbus altered the direction of his life. Eddie wandered over to find out the source of their interest and muscled his way in to see a gleaming new Ford 2-passenger automobile, the first of its kind in Columbus, with a salesman touting the benefits of owning such a revolutionary vehicle. When the man finished his pitch, Eddie, never one to shy from an adventure, asked if he could take a ride in the vehicle. "Sure, kid. Hop in and we'll go around the block." The exhilaration of driving by strolling couples at 10 miles per hour electrified Eddie. "That thrill would remain vivid all the rest of my life," he wrote in his autobiography, "and it had a direct influence on the course I would follow for many years." Cars became Eddie's passion. If 10 miles per hour was grand, how much better would 20 or 30 be? His knack for repairing broken bicycles and carriages.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?